Hi, good morning or afternoon, everyone. As you may have just heard me say, logistics this morning are a bit different. I'm self-starting. I'm pretty much a self-starter anyway, so it's not really much of a difference. It's just that neither Rabbi Kelman nor Shira is able to be with us today. So I will introduce myself by catching up on where we were as of last week. There were several responses in the chat section to last week's opening presentation, and I'm trying to be as responsive as I can to your individual requests and preferences while still being responsible. In the sense of we don't have really unlimited time and resources. In response to the opening presentation last week, there were a couple of specific requests. So I'm going to try to honor them. I'm going to honor them this morning. It reasonably fits in. I can't always be as prompt in responding, but this time it actually works out. So, given that it is already 2 minutes past the hour, I think that it's fair to move back to our screen sharing. So let me get us back here, and here we are. Okay. And again, we began last week by looking at some of the reasonably early songs. We started with El Yivneha Galil, which comes from, we're not even sure, somewhere in the 1880s. We looked at Bialik's El HaTzipor, which was written as a poem in 1890. And we looked at, in order to actually fulfill our promise of speaking about Shirei Chalutzim, we actually looked at the only song that is actually entitled a Shir HaChalutzim, and that's the one that's perhaps better known by its opening words is Anu Nia HaRishonim, that we will be amongst the first. So I'd like to begin this morning with some more songs that express the longing for the land of Israel. And there was a specific request made last week for Omrim Yeshna Eretz. So that will be the opening song today. As you probably saw in the chat, this morning's song list and the links to the different internet connections that we'll have are already posted. There was a request for English translations, and we'll begin this morning with some of the English. It is a bit of a chore. If translation already exists, then I can either link to it or I can actually try to copy and paste it. If, however, we're talking about a song to which there is no published English translation, then I'll do my best to explain it, but I can't really spend the time either in preparation or in presentation to translate it. So here we have a poem that was written by Shaul Chernyakhovsky in 1923. Chernyakhovsky, along with Bialik, one of the more familiar names of Zionist Israeli poets of the late 19th, early 20th century, lived from 1875 to 1943, born in Russia, grew up in a religious home, arguably one that we would call today modern Orthodox, since it was open to both the Haskalah, the Enlightenment, and to Zionism. He attended what the sources call a modern Hebrew school. I'm assuming that's what we call a cheder mitukan, as opposed to the chadarim of the primarily 18th and 19th centuries that we know of, again, mostly from Central and later from Eastern Europe, that engaged largely, if not exclusively, in very traditional Jewish studies. The curriculum was generally known as Gapat, the Gimel for Gemara, the Pei for Perosh Rashi, and the Tav for Tosafot. The Cheder Mitukan provided instruction in Hebrew language and in what was a burgeoning, at the time, a growing Hebrew literature, as well as a greater emphasis on Tanakh than was found in the more traditional Chadarim. So indeed, that was the kind of school that was attended by Chernyakhovsky. He was especially interested in languages. He studied German, French, English, Greek, and Latin. Hence, he later made somewhat of a reputation as a translator. His professional interests were in medicine, and since he could not get admission to a Russian university, he studied in Germany, in Heidelberg, and completed his medical studies in Switzerland. He went back to Russia, where he was unable to find a post because he had not studied in a Russian university. And finally, as he settled in St. Petersburg, his degree was recognized and he began to practice medicine. When World War I broke out, he was drafted into the Russian army and served as an army doctor. After the Bolshevik Revolution, his economic situation deteriorated, and he left Russia in the early 1920s permanently. After a brief stay in Constantinople, he moved to Berlin, and eventually in 1931, he was able to settle in Eretz Yisrael. He made his living as an official physician of the municipal school system in Tel Aviv. In the late 30s, he moved to Jerusalem. And as I said again, he died there in 1943. You see in front of you two versions of this poem, which is called Omrim Yeshna Eretz. There are those who say that there is this country someplace. And they do seem to represent two very different stages in Chernyakhovsky's attitude towards the land of Israel, and particularly towards his personal relationship to settlement in the land of Israel. The one on the left, a slightly older version, seems to be somewhat more pessimistic. The one on the right, a later version, seems to be somewhat more optimistic. And since the one on the left is pessimistic, I highlighted what seemed to be the most pessimistic portions of it in red. You can see that in repeating the theme, Ayei Ota Eretz, Ayam, where are they? Where is this land? Kochvei Ota Giv'ah, where are the stars that appear over the hills in this land? And he expresses what can either be a longing or perhaps a sense of frustration by saying, Mi Yanchenu Derech, who can lead us to this country? Who can point the way to this country? Yagidli Hanativa, again, who will be able to direct me to it? So, as I said, it's either an expression of longing or perhaps one of frustration. If indeed it was written, as it seems to be, in 1923, it would be while he was in living in Berlin. And further towards the bottom, he claims that somehow he or others have made a mistake. They've wandered. They're lost. They haven't yet achieved solace or respite. Ota Eretz Shemet, that land, that sun-drenched land that he speaks of in the opening paragraph, and we'll hear the song in a moment, Ota Lo Matzanu, that we've been searching and yet we have yet to discover it. And he says again with the note of pessimism, Ulai Kvar Einena, maybe the sun-drenched land that I heard about once, maybe it's no longer in existence. Vadai Nital Ziva, perhaps its luminescence has somehow been removed from it. Davar Shabishvilenu, and if indeed that were the case, he says this is something Adonai Lot Ziva. And he strikes a somewhat antagonistic note to religion. And again, that too is considered to be one of the hallmarks of Chernyakhovsky's poetry. So bearing that in mind, let's hopefully get the music going. And you can follow along with the words. Okay. Did you hear that? The music coming through?
No.
So give me one more second and see if I can't correct that. Okay. Okay. So again, the Shiva Koch Velechet are the seven planets. And I just happened to have found in searching around a very different rendition of this that will be in response to something that one of you mentioned to me last week. Somebody said that as a child in school, I think they said in the Yeshiva of Flatbush, they used to sing songs like these. So I actually found a performance of this song by the choir of the Yeshiva of Flatbush, jointly with the choir of Yeshiva Dov Revel of Forest Hills. So here again, same song, same poet, same poem, but a different rendition.
They say there is a land where heaven meets earth, and the seven wandering stars sprout from every hill.
Somewhat indicative of a particular attitude. On one hand, there's a recognition of a religious factor because there's a Rabbi Akiva who shows up. But on the other hand, the message that this Rabbi Akiva delivers is a more, I'd call it, humanistic message than a theological one. Right? It says that there is no particular Kedusha. Everybody is Kadosh. And of course, you know that if everybody is Kadosh, then really nothing is Kadosh, right? And in terms of looking for a Maccabi, in terms of looking for a savior, basically the message here is, no. There's no other savior, Ata HaMaccabi. You've got to save yourself. And this idea, the idea of not trusting in any external force, particularly not in a divine one, but rather taking matters into one's own hands, is, as I said again, something that is considered to be typical of Chernyakhovsky's poetry. And for that reason, I give you something here that's not on the sources for today, because it just occurred to me as I was making my last review that this would be an opportunity in which to refer to it. And that is another poem, an earlier poem by Chernyakhovsky, one indeed that he wrote in his teenage years, which the official title of it is Ani Ma'amin. And it's also somehow better known by its opening word, Chsachki. And in this poem, I'll get it up here, just a second. There we go. You can again see the way in which Chernyakhovsky has decided to take, as it were, his fate into his own hands. The concluding lines of the opening paragraph, Sachki, smile, rejoice, be happy, Tiva Adam A'amin, right? Rather than, as Rambam had it in his Ani Ma'amin, expressing a faith or a belief in God, Chernyakhovsky places his trust, as it were, in human beings, Ki Odeni Ma'amin Bach, because indeed he hasn't lost his faith in humanity.
Thank you.
So again, you can see in the stanza here that begins with Rucho Yashlich Kavlei Hevel, he concludes Lo Vara'av Yamut Oved, that as long as one works, as long as one is engaging in labor, but particularly labor in the land of Israel, Dror Nefesh, then one will have spiritual freedom, Hatladal, as well as earning one's sustenance. So again, you can see that this was a youthful expression on the part of Chernyakhovsky for a desire to somehow be part of this Zionist enterprise. And clearly he knew that it was going to be a struggle. You have the paragraph, the subsequent paragraph that says, Af bo yavo yis'u shalom ozu bracha la'om mila'om, that although there will be a struggle, hopefully it will end peacefully. Bracha la'om mila'om, that perhaps Israel will take its place amongst the family of nations. But again, the theme here is the one of ki od a'amin gam ba'adam gam b'rucho ruachaz, that his faith again is he places his faith and his trust in his fellow man. Okay. Now, of course, there were more, there were expressions of love for the land of Israel that were considerably more congenial to religion than those expressed by Chernyakhovsky. And here we have a series of very early religious Zionist songs. The earliest one that I could find a reference to, I'm sure you all know it well, Eretz Yisrael b'li Torah, hikaguf b'li neshama, o kimo guf b'li neshama, that the land of Israel without Torah is like a body without its soul. The tune to this, nobody's ever really been able to identify its real origins. It clearly was a popular folk tune at the time. What I can, however, tell you is that my investigation indicates that this was written, you can see the date, 1929. Now, you may recall that 1929 was a year of some of the more violent and bloody, some will call them pogroms, that took place in the land of Israel, Arab-inspired uprisings against Jewish settlements. Particularly well-known, unfortunately, or infamous, was the riot in Hebron that took place in 1929. Among whose casualties were students in the Hebron Yeshiva. And it seems very likely that this little ditty was composed somehow to mark that tragic occasion and to give some specific recognition in mourning to the casualties in the yeshiva community in Hebron. Let's get it up here. Thank you. as you can see, one can go on and on and on. I will tell you, I confess, I have absolutely no idea what Dundai is. I've tried a variety of different ways to search for it. I don't know whether it's Russian, whether it's Polish, whether it's Romanian, whether it's Ottoman Turkish, whether it's just, a made up word. I really don't know. If any one of you has some insight into this, then please, if you'll share it with me, either through the chat or by email afterwards, I'll be delighted to share it with everybody else when we meet again next. And that brings us to not just a recognition of the positive contribution of religion to the settlement of the land of Israel, but it brings us more specifically to religious Zionism. And here we have a poem that was written in 1931, specifically to be the anthem or the hymn of a religious Zionist youth movement called B'nai Akiva. The roots of B'nai Akiva in the somewhat older religious Zionist youth movement that was called Brit Chalutzim Datiyim, known in an abbreviated fashion as Bachad, has been written about. There's a link here to a source I mentioned last week, the Oneg Shabbat blog of David Asaf. Here we have the poem itself. It was written by Rabbi Moshe Tzvi Neria. Rabbi Moshe Tzvi Neria himself came on Aliyah from the Soviet Union in 1930 at the age of 17. He settled in Yerushalayim, where he became attached to the father, Rabbi Avraham Yitzchak Cook, and to his son, Tzvi Yehuda Cook. In 1939, Rabbi Neria, along with a Rabbi Zuckerman, established the first B'nai Akiva yeshiva in a place in central Israel called Kfar HaRoeh, the letters again of HaRoeh standing for Rabbi Avraham HaKohen Cook. So you can see how Rabbi Cook's influence permeated the B'nai Akiva movement almost from its establishment. And it's not surprising, therefore, to have observed over the last 50 years how much of the present-day B'nai Akiva movement aligned itself first with the Gush Emunim movement that also has its roots in the philosophy of Rabbi Cook. And again, in the most recent elections in Israel, how much of religious Zionism is represented now in the government in Israel by the religious Zionist parties. When I joined B'nai Akiva in the early 1950s, it had a different tune to Yad Achim, not the one that we're going to hear now. The one that we're going to hear now was only composed somewhere around 1952, 1953, by someone, again, whose name I mentioned last week. His name was Mechel Perlman, Michael or Mechel Perlman, who was a founding member of Kibbutz Yavne, and who was the music teacher on Kibbutz Yavne, as well as having an internationally recognized expertise in Tamei HaMikra, in Torah reading. And for some reason, in the early 1950s, either he or somebody else decided to replace the original tune of Yad Achim with the one that you will hear now.
יד אחים לכם שלוחה, הנוערך אביב, על דגלנו כולכם, חנו מסביב, יזהיר לכם כוכב תורה, דרככם סוגה בעבודה, ב- בלב אמיץ בעזרת השם, עלו נעלה קדימה בני עקיבא, הידד במעלה קדימה בני עקיבא, הידד במעלה. מולדת זו ארץ אבות, ארצנו הקדושה, מידי אביר יעקב, לנו מורשה. ראשינו בעמקי תורתה, כפינו ברגבי אדמתה, ולב אמיץ בעזרת השם, עלו נעלה קדימה בני עקיבא, הידד במעלה. קדימה בני עקיבא, הידד במעלה.
Within each of the two paragraphs, there are in each paragraph there are really two lines that are truly representative or emblematic of the philosophy of Bnei Akiva. Its motto consists of two words, Torah va'avoda. Torah, traditional Torah study, avodah, work, but not just any work. At least initially, it meant agricultural work. So you can see in the opening paragraph, the third and fourth lines, Yazhir lachem kochav Torah, the star of Torah will shine for you. Okay. And on the other hand, Darkechem, your path, sugah ba'avodah, is as it were either defined by avodah. So here we get Torah va'avodah in the opening paragraph. And again, the third and the fourth lines in the second paragraph, Rashenu, our heads, our minds, our intellects, Be'imkei Torata, are plumbing the depths of the Torah, while Kapenu, our hands, our arms, Berigvei Admata, are digging into the, or furrowing into the soil of the land of Israel. So here again, we have a different approach to Zionism and to settlement in the land of Israel, one that pays greater recognition to the religious element in it, but again, that is also emphasizing physical labor and particularly agricultural work. And the Bnei Akiva movement always, or at least in its early years, emphasized kibbutz life, another song that was all popular amongst Bnei Akiva members was Amar Rabbi Akiva v'avta l'reacha kamocha ze klal gadol b'Torah. The idea that one should try to live out this principle of love for one's fellow, whose expression in a kibbutz is perhaps easier than it is elsewhere, since there is an underlying principle of equality amongst all of the members. Hence, we get this song, written again by Rav Neria, and as far as I could tell, he wrote this in 1933, actually on Lag Ba'Omer, and the occasion of the laying of the cornerstone of the first structure of the Bnei Akiva kibbutz near Petach Tikva, called Kfar Avraham, that's no longer in existence. But it also marked the 40th anniversary of the establishment of the Bnei Akiva youth movement. Now, the interesting thing is that Rav Neria at this juncture was barely 20 years old and was a madrich, a leader in the Jerusalem branch of Bnei Akiva. And the song you see that there it says that the tune is a Hasidic tune, a folk tune, and you'll recognize it pretty much as soon as I give me 1 second here. Yeah. I'm going to sing this. Actually, I've got have to sing the next two songs. And you'll recognize the tune, and I invite you to join with me. It goes as follows. Hayachim nari'a ad asher nagi'a likvutzat b'nei Akiva. Hayachim nari'a ad asher nagi'a likvutzat b'nei Akiva. Hoy matay yavo hayom yitgashem hachalom halom chazon haneurim. Hoy matay yavo hayom yitgashem hachalom halom chazon haneurim. The tune, to the best of my investigation, is credited not just to Hasidim in general, but it's credited somewhat more specifically to the Boyaner Hasidim, which was a very interesting thing for me to discover, given that I live here on West End Avenue in Manhattan, and not 10 blocks away from me is a Boyaner Shtibel, where I've never heard this tune, but that doesn't mean that it wasn't a Boyaner Niggun to begin with. As a matter of fact, it's such a popular tune that there is yet another Zionist song that is sung to that tune. We're not going to look at it in detail this week. We will, Amir Tzah Hashem, in one of the coming weeks. But for those of you who might have already recognized it, it's the tune to which a poem is sung. The poem is called Rav HaLaila.
Rav HaLaila.
Rav Halayla, Rav Shireinu Habakei Al HaShamayim, Shuvi Shuvi Horateinu Mechudeshet Shivatayim. So as you see, the Hasidic Nigunim seem to have played a rather disproportionate role in early Zionist and Israeli songs, disproportionate, of course, to the participation of Hasidim in the Zionist movement. We'll talk a little more about this tune in particular when we get to Rad HaLaila. But for now, I also want to move to the last song on this page, which is a song for which I am alone responsible for the presentation of these words. As much as I tried, I could not find this song anywheres online. Not the words to the song, not the tune to the song, and for that matter, not even a reference to it. One showed up in one Google search, but it disappeared as quickly as it showed up, and it never came back again. So again, if anyone out there happens to have any more specific information about the song or about the tune. Again, if you'll share it with me, I'll be glad to share it with the audience. It's a song that I heard from my parents, who both knew and spoke Yiddish, but Yiddish was not the language of our home. So I'm assuming, again, that this is something that they themselves either acquired when they were younger, either in school or perhaps more likely in the Mizrahi HaPol HaMizrahi movement. It's called Eretz Yisrael Das Land von Torah. And again, showing the relationship of the religious Zionist pioneer, not only to the land of Israel, but to the Torah of Israel. The words, I'll read them first and then I'll sing them. It goes as follows. Eretz Yisrael, das Land von Torah, right? The land of Israel is the land of the Torah. Und das Land von Glück. It's also the land of fortune. Weil die Zeiten von Maccabi, since as far back as the time of the Maccabees, kehren mir zurück, we have returned. So it's expressing again the longing for the land of Israel, the appreciation for the land of Israel, and the recognition of the return to the land of Israel. And the refrain goes as follows. Mir chalutzim, we are pioneers. Mir Hadusem, we are religious pioneers. Mir Vos Arbeiten auf Kibbutzim, we're the ones who work in Kibbutzim. Val Mir, because we, mit unser starker Hand, with our strong hands, Velen Boinen Dos Hele Galant, we're the ones who are going to build or rebuild the Holy Land. And it goes as follows. Eretz Yisrael, das Land von Teure und das Land von Glück, weil die Zeiten von Maccabi kehren mir zurück. Eretz Yisrael, das Land von Teure und das Land von Glück, weil die Zeiten von Maccabi kehren mir zurück. Mir Chalusim, mir Hadusim, mir was arbeiten, auf Kibbutzim, weil mir mit unser starker Hand willen bäun in das heilige Land. Next stanza. Dort gewesen Steiner und dort gewesen Sand, bis gekommen ein junger Cholutz mit sein starker Hand. There on one hand were stones, there on the other hand was sand, until the young pioneer came along with his strong hand and was able to remove the stones and was able to plant instead of the sand. And again, the refrain, Mir Chalutzim, Mir Hadosim, we are the religious pioneers, Mir Vos Arbeiten Neuf Kibbutzim, and we're the ones who live on Kibbutzim, Val Mir, because we, with unser starker Hand, with our strong hands, Velen Boinen Das Hele Galan, we're the ones who are going to rebuild the Holy Land. And that takes us to what will be, as they see on the clock, the last song we'll have an opportunity to cover today. And again, it is partly in response to a request from the audience. I got several emails in response to last week. Two of them I want to mention in particular. One of them included a selection from a book by Menachem Begin. I'll see if I can get it up here on. You might be able to see the email. Someone was good enough to share with me a selection from Menachem Begin's book, White Nights, The Story of a Prisoner in Russia, in which he talks about another prisoner approaching him, awakening him from a semi-sleeping state, and saying to him in a whisper, Menachem, Menachem, do you remember the song Loshuv? If you may remember last week in introducing Hatikva, I said that I had heard from my grandparents that there was a time before it became known as Hatikva that it was called Loshuv because of the key line in the opening paragraph, Lashuv el Eretz Avotenu, to return to the land of our ancestors, Ir Bad David Hanan, to Jerusalem, the city that was David's capital. And for that reason, people would, at one time or another, at the end of a Zionist meeting, they would say, Lomir Zingin Lashuv, let's sing Lashuv, or Hatikva. So here you have actually a selection from a book by Menachem Begin, in which he makes reference to Hatikva as Lashuv. That was one of the comments that I received. Another one was a request. And the request was for Shir HaEmek, the song that you should see on the screen in front of you. And the request came in a rather particular way. The email, the writer of the email said that her father, as a young man in school in Germany, learned this song because it was in a film that they were shown in the 1930s, I imagine, in the 1930s or perhaps maybe probably the 1930s, a film about the Zionist enterprise in Palestine that included the song called Shir HaEmek. So I went fishing online and I found Shir HaEmek. Not only did I find the song, but I actually found the clip from the movie that this correspondent's father probably saw as a child in a Jewish school in Germany nearly a century ago.
Can I say something? My grandfather in Hungary had a movie theater. That was his business in a small town called Kisvárda in Hungary. And my father remembers this film being shown by his father. Generally, he showed, you know, general films. It wasn't a Jewish theater, you know, that was not the general kind of film. But he brought in this very Zionist film to show to the audience in the 1930s.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you so very much. Here it goes. Okay. You can follow along with the words if you wish. I'll tell you what. No, you don't get follow along.
What happened to the words?
Unfortunately, I can't show you both the movie and the words at the same time. So if you downloaded the sources for today, then you have the text of the song and you could follow along. If not, between you and me, I think that the pictures speak louder than words. If a picture is worth 1,000 words, then we've got a couple of million words coming up here on the screen. Then we can get to the words. Okay. The words, as you see, Ba'minuchalaya Gea, respite has come to the weary. Margoa, again, tranquility or rest, le'amel, to somebody who has worked hard. Laila chiver mistareya, a pale night has fallen, asdot emek Israel, on the fields of the Jezreel Valley. Tal milmata, dew on the ground, levanameal, and the moon above. Mi Beit Alfad Nahalal, naming two of the early settlements in Emek Israel. Ma ma laila milel, what does the night have to say? Dmama bi Israel, there is silence in the valley. Numa Emek Eretz Tiferet, the land, the glorious land is now at rest. Anu lecha mishmeret, and you can rest peacefully because we, the pioneers, are going to guard you. You can see on the left-hand side, here I actually found an English translation. And as you can see, there's also a link. It's called HebrewSongs.com. So those of you who would like to see full translations of all of these songs, I can't promise you that they are all available on this website, but it is certainly the most likely place to look if indeed that's what you're looking for. And here, of course, again, just for those of us who need a refresher in terms of geography, this is where the Jezreel Valley, Emek Israel, is situated, right? The Haifa Harbor is easy to recognize in the upper left-hand corner, right? Mifrat Haifa is easy to recognize in the upper left-hand corner of both maps, as is the Sea of Galilee on the right-hand map. So you can see that the area somewhat more centrally located between the Mediterranean and the Jordan and somewhat south of a line that would go from Haifa to Tiberia is where the Jezreel Valley, Emek Israel, is situated. And since the song made reference to Beit Alpha and to Nahalal, so again, just a reminder that Nahalal was actually the first Moshav Ovdim, the first worker settlement. It was founded in the Jezreel Valley in Emek Israel, about midway between Haifa and Afula, founded by families who had come to the land of Israel during Aliyah Bet, during the second Aliyah, and who had previously lived and worked in a variety of villages and even in some of the earliest kibbutzim. And the reason that they established a Moshav Ovdim was their intention to create a new type of agricultural settlement that blended some of the communal principles of the kibbutz, but while still allowing for a little more capitalism, for private ownership of land. So each founding family received a 25 acres of land, and you can see here the founding principles of the Moshav. The land was given to the settlers on a lease, right, because the land itself was owned, as it were, by the Jewish people. The principle of independent work, of mutual assistance, communal buying and selling, and of course, an emphasis on Hebrew language. And Nahalal was founded in 1921, Beit Alpha founded a year later in 1922. And essentially, that is pretty much what we have time for. Let me have a look and see. Let's come out of here and have a look at the chat. Din dun in Hebrew is the sound of the ringing of a bell. Yeah, but that's not dun dai. Yeah, it's close. Thank you. It's certainly closer than anything I've found up until now.
I just want to tell you, I said it last time also, that I am a seventh generation born in Jerusalem, and I grew up with all these songs. It was so emotional for me. You can't imagine. I grew up with all those, and I know all the melodies and the words, and Ibn Akiva and all this. So thank you so much.
That's the reason that we're doing it, to give people again that kind of, you know, warm nostalgic feeling.
Amazing.
And not just that, it isn't just you know, to celebrate a past. It's also, to an extent, I hope, a hope for the future. That if indeed there were times that we had nothing better to do, so to speak, than to sit around the campfire and to sing songs about the land of Israel and about Torah and about our love for one another, that, you know, maybe one day we'll be able to do that again.
Amen. Amen.
Okay. Yiddish, Vayehi, Bishon. Yeah, again, as I said, we will have an opportunity to spend a little more time talking about the influence of klezmer music and the influence of Hasidic music on early Israeli or Palestinian Jewish songs. But I'm just curious, if I may, and if you allow me to get personal for a moment, I see a note here from somebody named Vera Sokolow. always looking for relatives. If you'd rather just, you know, send me an email afterwards, I'd love an opportunity to get in touch with you and to see whether there's more to it than the name. If you're related to Nachum Sokolov, who was one of the presidents of the World Zionist Organization, an early Hebrew journalist after whom the Journalist House in Jerusalem is named, then we're not related, because I'm not related to him. But in any event, just an invitation to get in touch if you're interested. Okay. Okay. Not aware of any relatives. Oh well. Well, okay. we can be relatives in spirit, if not in genealogy. Okay. All right.
Can I ask one more question?
Go ahead. Yeah.
I'm so sorry, I missed the beginning of the class, so I don't know. I had asked you last time, are you familiar with the song which was called either Po or Sham, wherever it was sung, Po Be'eras Chemdat Avot? Have you heard of the song, Dr. Sokolow?
Yes.
Oh, in Israel,
it was a very religious song, which I learned from my parents, who were quite Zionist. After the Shoah, they survived the Shoah in Hungary and Slovakia, and were members, and I don't think this is so well known, of a group called Pole Aguda, which was very worker-oriented and very Zionist, even though it was not, you know, to some extent a part of the Aguda. And they knew this song. It might have been a song of the movement, but it's very beautiful and very religious and very much about Israel. So
I've made a note to spend some time researching it. Part of the constraint that I have here is that I had to adopt some sort of sequence, And I basically decided to adopt one that is roughly chronological. So haven't yet gotten, you know, we've barely gotten out of World War. In fact, next week, we're going to actually look back a little. We've gotten as far today as, you know, as 1923 or thereabouts. But we're going to take a step back next week, and we're going to look at some of the songs that came out of World War One.
So I wasn't aware, and I don't know when this song was written.
It could be that it's an older song. It could be, as I said, you know, I will look into it, and we'll try at least, you know, to do my best. That I can promise.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Sokola, would you entertain a question about historical context?
Please.
So I'm trying to do some family research. So some of my relatives were early Chalutzim, but when I go to their family trees, even though there are documents saying who their father and grandfather were, the family trees have blanks and not their name. Is it possible that somebody who became a secular Zionist or a less religious Zionist would have been disowned, or would it have been that serious from a Hasidic family?
I doubt very much whether in any case they would be able to change records.
These aren't official likely. Records. They're just,
I'm saying, it's not likely. What's likelier is that, you're talking about a period. If we go from, let's say, from 1888, to 1939. Okay. So you've got a period of 50 years that saw some of the most massive migrations in history. And along with people moving from one place to another, many of them, if not most of them, were intent upon starting new lives, which also meant that in many cases, they wanted not only to change their fortunes, but their names as well. There are urban legends, I'm sure you know, about Jews coming to the United States and having their names changed at Ellis Island because the officials at Ellis Island didn't recognize them as being either Jewish names or being, you know, Russian names or things like that. There's a story that the actor Leonard Nimoy, right? Nimoy is Russian for death. And the story is that a member of his family was online to get processed at Ellis Island, and the official asked them their name, and a friend wanted to the official to know that he was talking to a deaf person. So he pointed to him and he said, Nimoy, right? And that's what got written down. So it's possible that it wasn't that somebody, you know, crossed out a name as much as that somebody changed the name. And once you change a name, then it's very difficult to get it resituated in genealogical records.
So being a Zionist wasn't necessarily a cause for being disowned.
It may have been. Look, you know, families, you know, there are all kinds of families, and families do all kinds of things, you know, both internally and externally. You know, if you're talking about record keeping, you're saying if they're family records, that's a different question. But it, even no matter how much a family might have wanted to disassociate itself from a member of the family, it's not likely that they would have been able to alter records of it. Okay. Thank you all again so very, very much. It's been a pleasure and a delight sharing the nostalgia with you, and looking forward again to continuing next week, where, as I said, we'll begin at least with some of the songs that accompanied Jewish soldiers as they participated one way or another in World War One, and setting the precedent then for what later would become the songs of an actual Jewish army.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good week.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Stay well.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.